FM. Keith Murphy.
If you ain't first, you're last.
Andy Fails.
I pity the fool.
It's the Murph and Andy Show, powered by AD.
You can do it!
On 1460 KXNO, and now on 106.3 FM.
All right, here we go. Good afternoon. A new week here of the Murph and Andy Show. 1460 KXNO and on the FM 106.3. Andy Fails and Andrew Downs with you this afternoon. Andrew, how you doing, man?
Doing great, man. How about you?
I'm doing well. Happy post-Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Welcome back. Yeah.
Yes.
We all had a nice break, had some time off. Murph is off today. He's going to be off this week. I'm going to be off for at least part of this week as well. As we both had vacations planned early in the year to warm spots. I was going to go to Mexico, and obviously you know what happened after that. So we pulled the plug, and I'm trying to think of something else to do this week because I have this time off. But what are you going to do? There really isn't anything you can do. You just hit, and I'm not going to sit around at my house all week. And so I thought, in the meantime, until I come up with something to do, I want to come in and talk about what a great sports weekend we just had.
Yeah, this was a happy thing for me yesterday when I got the text from you saying, yeah, you know what, I'm going to come do the show. Because I was like, you know, I'll probably just do this show myself today. It's hard to bring in a guest on a show, like a Monday show post a football weekend here, because we do the recaps, mm-hmm, we have best call, worst call, all that kind of stuff. And so I was like, you know, I'm not going to bring somebody else in to just kind of listen to me do a show. But to have you here is fantastic. It's going to be kind of a weird week. I don't know exactly when you and Murph are going to be here and gone. But we'll get through it one way or the other.
Yeah, we'll do just fine. We've got a lot of sports to talk about right now. And this makes me so thankful that college football did find a way just to play a season.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks weird. We are never going to want to do it again. But, oh my God, the difference it makes between having a season and the idea of not having a season. Because we are having fun. And when it comes to a sports talk radio show or a TV show like Sound Off, the very best times on those shows are after you've had a great weekend where your teams have won big games.
Yes.
It's so much fun just to let everybody be happy. So let's do that today. We'll just leave the phones open the whole 2 hours. 284-5966, 284-KXNO, at any time you want to call in. And just tell us, how good do you feel right now? If you're a Cyclone fan, I don't know that you've ever felt better about football. If you're a Hawkeye fan, you felt better, but this is pretty darn good. You're rolling right now, and you just beat your rival again. And you got a basketball team that's doing really well, too, you're excited about. So all is right with the world for the time being.
Yeah, man, things are good.
They are. This is fantastic. And considering the lumps we took at the beginning of the season, I mean, it looked like Iowa State was lost, really lost. And it looked like Brock Purdy was... I had lost his mojo.
There was
regressing.
Yeah, there were questions about him. There were questions about Campbell and kind of the direction of the program with the way the season ended last year and the way it started with that Louisiana game. There was a lot of, man, these last three or four games, you know, the offense has only scored this much. They've given up this many
points. You were stringing it together from last season and bringing it into this season.
It felt like it was headed in the wrong direction.
You were in that... you get in those building modes where you start building your case for why things are just screwed.
Yes.
You know, you can do that either way, but you know how it goes. You start looking at the way last season ended. Was the off season rocky? Is there a pattern with other players in the past? Is this another quarterback who's regressing? You know, is this another case where Iowa State just can't build an offensive line to help itself? If you're an Iowa fan, you are absolutely looking at this past offseason. What a mess this was.
Yes.
Brian Ferentz, his play calling, is that tied to his bad offseason? Do the players not trust him anymore? You start building this big case like you're going to trial or something, and you're trying to just put together your ultimate argument to win for you. But now you're thinking, why was I ever thinking about that?
Yeah.
It was just a little blip.
A few wins,
nothing.
And everybody feels better.
Did everybody have a good Thanksgiving? What was your Thanksgiving like?
Ours was, it was different. You know, we have big family Thanksgivings. And typically my wife and I will do both her parents and then, which is kind of a smaller one, but really good food. And we do that in the morning, have like a lunchtime meal. And then we'd head out to my parents where there's like 30, 35 people, family from all over the Midwest comes to my parents' house and have the big thing and go over there Friday to watch the Iowa Nebraska game, all of it. And obviously none of that happened. So it was much smaller. We just stayed home. We did a Zoom call with a lot of people. So that was fun. My wife's a great cook. And so, you know, dinner was fantastic. We had a good time. It was just, it was quiet and it was different.
So I had to work at WHO 13 on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and I was by myself those days. So I'm pretty worn out doing those and just didn't want to do the Thanksgiving until I could kind of clear it out of the way. So we had a nice dinner. Thanksgiving, we had frozen pizza. Friday, we had a nice beef tenderloin. It was kind of late, though. It was a really great dinner. But I didn't do the Thanksgiving dinner until Saturday. So I had the whole day to do it. So I got up early, did a whole bunch of prep work. Actually, I had done some in the days prior. Did a whole bunch of prep work and then stopped at 11 and then just started watching football and didn't pick up again until after I had finished moving through the Iowa-Nebraska game, picked up again, and we had a family Thanksgiving, not a normal one, but a family Thanksgiving. So it was pretty good, and then got plenty of shopping and stuff. So let's do a quickie poll just to gauge everybody's pulse and then launch into the rewind.
What was the best part of the holiday weekend? Food, family, and time off, and that's all one. We're just saying
like, yeah. everything or
sports.
Sports.
Was it sports?
I figure you've got to stack it that. You got to stack it like that for anything else to have a chance.
Because I loved having 4 days off of just kind of hanging out at the house. We had some nice weather, so we got outside quite a bit, and that was fun. And, you know, I got to do some day drinking, which is a rare thing for me, so that was cool. I enjoyed a lot of the weekend. But it's sports, man. It really is.
It came down to, it was food and family just suffered by comparison to years prior.
Yes,
so
I think that's
those were not
too.
In there.
Yeah.
The time off is great.
It was
Everybody
great.
Likes the time off. So to me, it comes down to time off versus football. And the football was so much fun.
And
it's football.
If Iowa had done what Iowa did this weekend, which is, you know, beat Nebraska and go 2-0 in basketball, move up to, you know, third in the AP poll, I probably would pick food, family, time off. Even as a Hawkeye fan, to watch Iowa State do what they did Friday, and then more importantly, I guess, to watch the way the fan base reacted to that win, to hear Chris Williams, you know, very emotional in an instant reaction podcast, to see, I think the guys at Wide Right, Natty Light, put together a video of Cyclone fans, you know, reacting to the missed field goal and celebrating, and to kind of see that and hear that and, like, really step back and respect what they've done as a program and where they've gotten. I think that was really cool too. And then some other, the Big Four basketball. The Iowa women look good. Caitlin Clark is the freshman of the week in the Big Ten. The Drake Bulldogs went 2-0. That was great. Iowa State got off the mat after a bad first half yesterday and beat Arkansas Pine Bluff. You like to see that. All in all, we just had an epic sports weekend. And so that's, you pile all of that up, and it's definitely sports for me.
I think you're right about that. Okay, so let's get into the Iowa State-Texas rewind. Going into this game, we heard there was going to be thunderstorms, and maybe that would affect things. I didn't see any rain.
No.
What I saw was a gigantic stadium with people, like, really responsibly spread out across it. And it was proof of how gigantic that stadium is. Because some of those people that were up in that upper deck, they were like half a mile away
right,
from the field. They
right.
were way up there. So it was a quiet feeling to the crowd. It was quiet. But it was all set up. Iowa State gets there. They're healthy. Didn't hear any last-minute cancellations like we're so accustomed to
right
now.
There were some rumors during the week that Mike Rose wasn't fully healthy, and maybe he wasn't 100%, but good to see him like in uniform ready to play. You felt good at the start of that game that everything had come together to make this happen.
Yeah, so it all gets started. But Texas jumps out to an early lead.
Ellinger looking to run it left, designed run. And he is able to get outside, inside the 15, inside the 10, into the end zone for the touchdown. Sam Ellinger takes it in from 18 yards out, and Texas adds to its lead.
So they go up 10-0. The first possession, there's a long pass to Eagles. I thought that was huge by the Iowa State defense to bend, not break there,
sure,
and force them into the field goal. And as you look at the final score, you could say, well, that was a game right there. That made, you can make all kinds of arguments like that throughout the game, but that's your first opportunity to look back on the rewind and say, wow, that ended up being huge.
No doubt.
That they stood up there.
You could tell that Texas thought they had a weakness in Iowa State's defense in the secondary, and they thought they could go deep plays on them over and over, and did for a lot of success.
It looked like it worked because so many times with this John Haycock defense, rushing three, there's just no pressure on the quarterback, particularly early. And you think to yourself, oh my God, if they don't get any pressure on this quarterback, they're going to get killed in this game.
Yeah.
And you really thought that. That looked like Texas had a great game plan together for Iowa State. Like they were going to control the will of that. Their will was going to control the game.
Yeah.
But they go up 10-0, and the Cyclones really looking rickety on offense, looking like Breece Hall was not going to have a whole lot of daylight. Like they just needed to find a way to get a first down and get the wheels turning a little bit. They did. I think Tariq Milton finally got a first down. They started moving the ball down the field methodically, and they cap it off and get it in the end zone.
Birdie fakes the handoff to Hall, looks right, fires that way, man wide open to Shaw. He has the catch inside the 10, a spin to the 5, touchdown, Sean Shaw, 35 yards.
Really good looking touchdown.
Yeah, huge play there.
Great play.
Reverse the momentum, get some of it back.
Just like that, it's a three-point game, and from that point on, it seems very even. Really doesn't seem like anybody's going to blow the other out. Early in the second half, teams trade field goals in the second quarter and goes to the halftime. Halftime score is 13-10 Texas. Early in the second half, Texas connects on another long pass, which leads to another score.
Johnson, the running back. Ellinger wants to throw. He has time. He delivers right. Caught. Touchdown. That was the tight end, Jared Wiley, that made the catch. And Texas strikes first here in the second half.
Yeah, that was a good drive there. Another long pass to Eagles. And that touchdown in the back corner of the end zone, he's wide open there.
And again, you start to worry a little. Okay, if they're going to be able to hit this, and now they have this 10-point lead back, and Iowa State's offense hadn't been terrible, but hadn't been, you know, had been trading field goals for touchdowns, essentially. You got a little worried.
And really kind of was doing that the whole game, where they were just having to settle for field goals. But the other thing you could really kind of see as it's going along is they're playing a clean game.
Yes.
They're not turning the ball over. They're not hurting themselves. They're taking what Texas will give them, and they seem like just hanging in there is ultimately winning the war, because Texas is feeling like, okay, we should be way ahead in this game.
It's kind of like the opposite of how Iowa, I think, feels. Like that Northwestern game, maybe, or the Purdue game, where Iowa, you feel like they're the better team, and you feel like they're playing a better game, but they let the other team hang around just enough that a couple of big plays late in the game can reverse things quickly. That's kind of the position Texas was in. You felt like they were the better team for most of the day, I think. Not noticeably, mm-hmm. Head and shoulders better, but they seemed to have it going a little bit, and you felt like, well, but they're not pulling away. And if Iowa State could just hit these field goals and stay within striking range, you never know what could happen.
And you keep thinking, you know, Iowa State turns the ball over at the wrong time here. That could be the game. And again, with a three-point final score, that very well may have been the game. But they just didn't do that. They didn't ever look bad on plays. They just kept after it. So after Connor Rosali hit another field goal, Texas gambles on fourth down near midfield.
And now Dicker on to punt. And he's going to fake it. He throws it. It's caught. And Brewer's brought down short of the first down by Rory Walling. The fake punt doesn't work. Brewer the catch, but Rory Walling would have none of it. Kick on the way, and it is good. Connor Aselli hits from 37, and it's 20-16. Iowa State back within four with 14:48 remaining.
So the fake punt is an exciting play, and that's all Rory Walling.
Yeah,
he really is. He's the one guy that reads that. Just makes a great tackle on the play. Tom Herman gets killed by the Texas media after that. And to me, that's hindsight.
I agree.
I mean, Rory Walling isn't in that position on that play, or he misses that tackle. It's a great play.
Yes.
It totally works.
And you, at that point, you have, what, a seven-point lead on Iowa State. You feel like if you can punch that in, if you can keep that drive going and go get a touchdown or something and take a two-score lead, this game is effectively over.
The fourth down calls, he is, am I going to step on this one here? No, yeah, I'll wait on that one for a second. 8 minutes to go, Texas up by four. They opted not to try a field goal, and instead they go for it on fourth down.
Fourth and inches from the 13-yard line of Iowa State. Ellinger from the shotgun. He will try to run it himself. He stopped! He stopped short! The Cyclone defense got the stop, and they'll take over on downs.
We think.
What a great play by the Iowa State defense getting up off the bottom of that pile. He did not make it. The Cyclones take over on downs.
Well, that's two fourth down stops here in the second half. One on the fake punt.
Mike Rose was in on that play as well.
I feel like that's the play of the game.
Yeah.
If I have to look back on it. And I'm really surprised it happened. Because Sam Ellinger is a great running quarterback. The Texas offensive line is huge. They're at home, not that they have the same kind of advantage they do when they have a full stadium, but it's their familiar turf. You should be able to gain a yard in that point of an important game.
There's no question. And like that, even that drive, earlier in that drive, he had been able to pick up 3, 4, 6, 7 yards and anytime he wanted to.
Well, the drive after that, too. Yeah, just buying time.
To go into shotgun on fourth and one, right. I know that's their offense, but that's something that's second guessable. And then, I mean, again, if they make it and they go in and score or don't give Iowa State the ball back, it's a huge play and it's the right call. It's hard to defend not going up by a touchdown in that situation. You know, you're up four, you have a good field goal kicker, you're well within range. Don't you just want to kick the field goal there and make Iowa State march down and score a touchdown to tie you?
Well, the broadcast team is divided there. Mike Golic Jr. thinks they did the right thing. Go ahead and go for it on fourth down.
Because you're right. They should be able to make that play.
No doubt. Whether they're in a shotgun or not.
Yes.
I mean, shotgun, at least you give a guy like Ellinger who's shifty, kind of makes up his mind on the fly, give him another second to maybe decides to bounce outside.
Line,
do
right.
We find some sort of a little bit of daylight there. Matt Barry thinks they should have gone for the field goal, gone up by three more points, and yeah, in hindsight, it's totally right. They should have gone with the easy points, but whatever. It's fourth and one on your field. Should be able to get that in that situation.
And maybe some bravado of Iowa State versus Texas. You know, Tom Herman looks across the field and says, "You know, if we can't get 1 yard on Iowa State, we don't deserve to win this game."
I don't think it's necessarily disrespectful to Iowa State there. You just have to, yeah, bravado. You have to say, we are Texas. We have the pick of Texas recruits across this state. This is our home field. This is a huge game for us. You gain a yard there on fourth down. And if you're Iowa State and you somehow make that play, you're Texas, you tip your hat and say, hey, you beat us on that play.
Absolutely.
Straight up and down. And they did. So that was, I thought that was the play of the game. 8 minutes left to go. Or wait a minute. Nope. I'm losing my spot here. Teams traded punts. Iowa State gets the ball down 4:03 and 70 yards to go.
Purdy drops to throw this time. Fires over the middle. Caught by Sainer. To the 30-yard line of Texas goes Dylan Sainer. Fake handoff to Hall. Purdy pumps. Looks. Fires left. It's caught by Kohler. Inside the 15 to the 14-yard line. Hall takes the snap. Bursts up the middle for the touchdown. Breece Hall. Now there's a flag on the far end of the field. There's a flag down. Was there a false start by Iowa
State? There might have been. Or I don't know.
Offsides.
Defense.
All right. Lined up in the neutral zone. That penalty is declined.
Breece Hall with a touchdown run, and the Cyclones take the lead.
Iowa State has the waiting game has paid off for them.
Yes.
They have been patient, haven't done anything rash. They've just hung back and played their game, and then Purdy starts finding the tight ends in the middle of the field, on the sidelines. I mean, just finding the tight ends and moving the ball down the field. And then when Breece Hall gets a few spots in the fourth quarter, even though he's had the toughest game of the season, he gets positive yards.
What a drive that was. I mean, the pressure on them at that point to go down and score a touchdown. They'd scored, what, one touchdown all game to that point? 3 minutes left. You're down by four, 70 yards. I think Chris Williams tweeted, 70 yards for the rest of our lives. You know, it's like, and those guys know that. They feel that. They understand that the entire Cyclone Nation was, you know, on pins and needles watching that. And for them to put that together, that's a mark of a different Iowa State. That's the thing that on Wednesday when we did Call Your Shot, I didn't think they would be able to do. That's the prove it moment that I needed to be proved to me that they were able to do that, and they did it.
Making catches in the middle of the field, those tight ends getting their legs just cut out from under them over and over again, falling hard on the ball and hanging on to it every single time. And they just played a clean game. And that was the difference. So Texas, though, that final drive, I mean, I would love to have been a fly on the wall in the houses of Cyclone fans then. What was it like in your house for that last drive? How did that feel? Because Texas, Ellinger is killing you, right? I mean, he's running around. He's buying time. He's picking up first downs. He's hitting receivers. He's doing the things that a good quarterback does. And you just can't do that much about it. So he's moving down the field, and you're looking at that green line they put in there for a field goal, and the line that you need to make it for the chance for a field goal being good enough to take it. And it's getting closer and closer and closer. And then there is, what is it, 15 seconds left?
Yeah, right around that.
Huge play on third down, and you're thinking they're going to be able to move close enough to not only have a chip shot field goal, but maybe just go ahead and score a touchdown. But then just as my DVR runs out, this happens.
57-yard field goal to force overtime for Texas. The kick on the way by Dicker. Plenty of leg. End over end. And it's no good. Wide left. And the Cyclones win it. 23-20. Iowa State defeats Texas. Cameron Dicker missed. He had a ton of leg, but missed it from 57. And the Cyclones get the victory and clinch at least a share of first place in the Big 12 Conference. How about that?
Actually, I was going to talk about the Latrell Bangston
sack,
yes. Which is
just huge.
Just absolutely the greatest thing that could have happened at the time.
Especially when you see that field. I mean, that field goal was good for, it was about a 57-yard field goal. It looked good for about 52 yards of it, and then hooked right
just
at the end.
Just pushing them back far enough. Latrell Bangston is the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Week, incidentally, with a couple of huge sacks in that game. And then that game tying, would-be game-tying field goal misses.
Just awesome.
And there you have it.
Just awesome. Awesome for Iowa State to win on a missed field goal.
Right. How many games have they lost right on missed field goals? Let's bring in some calls now for a moment before we go to the post game with Matt Campbell here. Bruce has been waiting. Bruce, welcome to the Murph and Andy Show.
Yeah. Interesting discussion, but my focus is on Texas getting all the best players in Texas. And this is coming, take it for what it's worth. It's coming from somebody that knows nothing about recruiting good football players. And, you know, I know very little, but here's what it looks like to me that, okay, so they get the best player, but there's a second best player in Texas, a third best player in every position, fourth best player, and those players may not necessarily want to go to Texas, all of them. And so other schools can get those players. And Texas has to decide, based just on their high school production, you know, who is the best. That's quote, unquote. I mean, who is it? And so that's not always a precise science, as near as I can tell, just from listening to people on the radio that do know what they're talking about. And then if somebody goes to a lesser school, Iowa State, but they play 3 or 4 years quarterback, that's got to be good for their development. And so I'm not sure that just – and there's 22 players, and, of course, they get maybe they get the best 22 players, but there's all those other players. And it just doesn't seem that unusual to me for a development school like Iowa or Iowa State to come up with a really good team that can beat Texas. Maybe I'm goofy.
No, you're not goofy. It happens all the time. Yeah, the best recruits don't automatically mean championships. Not at all. Make it a lot easier, Bruce. Thanks for that call. Make it a lot easier, but yeah, the second and third best recruits develop all the time into better players than those number one recruits. That's not surprising. So after the game on the field, Matt Campbell gets emotional.
How do you describe this team?
Oh, yeah, that's a really hard thing for me. Our senior class, our coaches, we've all been together. It's been a long road, so it's been a great joy.
What makes you so emotional?
Yeah, we just got great kids here. You know, it's not easy, but they've done a great job.
Okay, I think I will be able to identify that one in the future.
Yes, I think so.
I don't think I've heard him cry before.
No, that's the most emotional I've ever seen or heard him get.
Doesn't say a whole lot, doesn't give you a whole lot, but yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where if you see him crying on camera, that's probably all you need to know.
Yes.
Okay, so Iowa State now has a 99% chance of making the Big 12 championship game. Probably going to be a rematch with a hot Oklahoma team. They host West Virginia this Saturday at 2:30. Iowa State has climbed up a few more spots to number 12, the newest AP rankings. Iowa, incidentally, is number 24. In that Big 12 championship game, provided that they get there, each team gets 4,500 tickets and 500 student tickets.
Yes.
That's going to be held in Cowboys Stadium, which is gigantic.
Those are going to be hot tickets.
Those are going to be hot tickets and a sparse crowd.
Yes.
It's going to be interesting. So Saturday, December 19th.
It sucks that like Cyclone fans can't just invade Dallas, take over that stadium. You know, you put 60,000 Cyclone fans inside that stadium or something, it'd just be awesome.
This would be...
And you know,
it would have to be
that.
The all-time record for Cyclone fans traveling to a football
for
game.
For sure. Nobody would be saving for the bowl game. In this, you know, situation.
Let's save some of the talk about that we've got a lot of time between the, now and then. Jim joins us now. Jim, welcome to the Murph and Andy Show.
Hey, Andy. You know, you guys were talking earlier, you and Andrew, about bravado. I have a different take on it. I think Herman was looking across the field and going, man, they've taken our best shot, and they're still hanging around with us. I need to put this game away. I need to roll the dice. You know, that's why he did the fake punt. You know, and Walling had the great stay at home on that one, and then went for it on fourth down. You know, going 0-for-2 on fourth downs. You know, he was rolling the dice because he knew that he had to pull everything out to put these guys away, and he couldn't do it.
It's a interesting take. Yeah, it could be a little bit of desperation there, or a little bit of just somebody feeling like they. Need to maybe their regular game plan wasn't working the way they wanted to, and they need to think out of the box a little bit. Or you could go 180 degrees and just say, no, that's a team that feels like it should be able to do whatever it wants against this opponent right now, and it's been sitting back and let Iowa State take the lead for too long and was going to take it back with that one play. And if that works, I mean, the crowd doesn't go nuts because there is no crowd, but it's a big boost to the team. How about Perry? Perry joins us now. Hey, Perry.
Hey. I was just curious. In case there's a potential for a three-way tie, which is a very still possible, does anybody know what the tiebreaker would be after the head-to-head matchups with the other two teams, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, since they basically all split with Iowa State, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma State could potentially have a three-way tie, and they all beat each other, so they'd all be 1-1 against each other. So what would the next tiebreaker be?
Let's see here.
Or do we know?
There is another tiebreaker. I don't know what it is off the top
of my head.
Yeah,
I'm sure somebody knows.
Yeah, I think.
Somebody will let us know, I'm sure.
Williams, I think, had it tattooed on the back of his hand. So you got, Iowa State with just the one more game. The other teams are going to play a few more. I don't know what the potential tiebreaker is going to be. I mean, there's, the head-to-head, everybody's beating each other. Head-to-head against the next team down, is that what would be? And that would be Oklahoma and Iowa State in the same boat. I'm not sure. I won't sit here and speculate on it, but I don't know. Sorry about that, Perry. We'll figure it out. Mark is with us now. Mark, go ahead. You're on the Murph and Andy Show.
Hey, thanks, guys. So I was working on Friday, and so I'm listening to it a little bit on the radio, and the last 2 minutes of the game, my boss happens to have a TV in his office, and he goes, hey, you want to watch the end of the game? I said, sure. So we saw when we scored, Iowa State scored, and then when Texas got the ball back, and they start this dinking and dunking stuff going up the field, 5 yards, 6 yards, and I turned to my boss, and I said, Herman's playing for overtime. He's not trying to win right now. And
on that final drive, you thought that?
Oh, yes. I didn't think he was trying to get a touchdown the way the play calling was and the way they just slowly moved the ball.
I thought Iowa State's defense was playing so well on that drive. They were taking whatever they could get. And Ellinger was getting yards. And they were moving the ball pretty well, at least until they crossed the 50-yard line. Then Iowa State bowed up.
Well, I just thought he got a little conservative. I thought Texas got conservative, and that's where I started getting confident for the team, thinking, I think this is, it's going to come down to where he's just trying to get to overtime. Anyway, that was my take.
It's a good take. Fair enough. Thank you, Mark. Man, I have gone way too long on this kind of thing, but you know what, man? How often do you get a win like this to talk about?
Man,
this is just good, clean fun here. When we come back, we're going to rewind the Iowa-Nebraska game and have some more fun, different sort of fun with that one. We'll hear a little from Kirk Ferentz as we haven't really heard him before, but are sort of liking the...
Theater.com.
Everyone knows that Fairway has the best hand-cut meats, fresh produce, and more. But did you also know that you can save every week at Fairway just by signing up for the weekly ad from your neighborhood store? Go to fairway.com and discover great savings in...
Builder.com.
It's time for Murph and Andy's Play of the Day.
First and 10 of the Bears, 13. Give Williams big haul up the middle. Barreling to the 10, to the 5, to the end zone for the dagger of a touchdown. Jamal Williams, 13-yard touchdown run right through the heart of the Bears.
On 1460 AM and 106.3 FM, this is KXNO.
Okay, we took a lot of callers there in that first segment, so I'm running a little bit behind. You need to dive right into the Iowa-Nebraska rewind. This, I told you so.
You did.
I wanted Iowa to stomp all over Nebraska bad, but I've wanted that for the last 3 years, and it has not happened. This is the difference between an opponent that you care about and opponents that you don't care about.
For sure.
Illinois to Iowa. That was a completely different Nebraska effort. They're still a mess. That team is still a mess. But they got their effort was so much better against Iowa. They were trying hard.
You would have won best call if you were eligible for the BMW detail because you've had this exactly right. You said this is going to be a harder game. Nebraska was going to look better than they have, and this is going to be a close game. You had it less than a touchdown as an Iowa victory, and that's exactly what happened.
I was DVRing this game as I was watching Iowa State. And I was perfectly in the dark. It was doing really well. And then all of a sudden, I was distracted by something. And, I kind of, my eyes and ears instinctively tune out any update that pops up during the game you're watching.
Yes.
And there was one that I was not ready for. And it showed that Iowa-Nebraska were, it was close. I don't remember exactly what the score is. But it popped up and I was like, damn. Iowa is not smoking them right now, but I knew it. All right, so Iowa opens with a field goal tacked on another score late in the first quarter.
Beatrice looking for Tyrone. Has him. Caught, touchdown. Tyrone Tracy Jr. What a route.
All right, Nebraska looked improved over the prior week, but it's still like it looked like Iowa was going to romp here.
It did, yeah. I mean, Iowa's running game wasn't really able to get going too much, but Petras looked like he had settled into it a little bit, and it didn't seem like with Adrian Martinez those first couple of series that Nebraska was going to do anything offensively, so you still felt pretty good about it.
You thought, okay, they've got a couple of good initial stands in them for pride, but Iowa's going to wear them down, and then they're going to emotionally check out of this game, and Iowa's going to step all over. Didn't happen. Nebraska changed quarterbacks. He did that throughout the game. I didn't understand what his point was.
It was strange.
There. Because Luke McCaffrey is there to run the ball.
And he came in and gave them a spark. They had a couple of field goals, and then you never really saw him after that. And Adrian Martinez was good in a couple of series, but not didn't seem like he was head and shoulders better than McCaffrey.
It seemed like Martinez would look very good, and you'd be like, okay, yeah, he needs to stay in the game for them. And then he would look really bad and be like, okay, I understand why he's coming back out again. But I thought the whole thing made Nebraska look like they didn't have a game plan. So they changed quarterbacks, hit two field goals while Iowa's offense starts to melt.
Empty backfield, third down and long. Petras looking, plenty of time. Now he's forced out of the pocket, rolls out to his left, throws downfield and right to a white shirt, intercepted by Nebraska. Oh, boy.
That was a terrible interception.
Just awful. I mean, he's seeing ghosts. He did a full 360 in the pocket because he thought he was being flushed. But if you can stand in the pocket and do a 360, you're not under pressure. Mm-hmm. He ends up going out of the pocket and then throws into triple coverage. It was like no part of that play made any sense. You could tell he was shaken. He was seeing ghosts. He didn't know what was going on, and it was an awful decision.
And so as I'm watching that, from that point on, I'm watching every play. Every time that he throws a ball, I'm watching it just really, really skeptically, expecting it not to work out and surprised when it does. Are you doing that too?
Yes,
and
for
I suspect that the Iowa receivers are starting to do that too.
It seems
where
like
even
it.
Balls that are catchable, they don't catch.
They expect it not to be catchable or not to come to them, so they're not ready when it does.
They don't know where the ball is going to be.
Right.
And it just seems to permeate the whole Iowa offense to the point where the passing is like a last ditch effort. Like it's an option that isn't there for them anymore. So another Keith Duncan field goal gave the Hawkeyes a 7-point lead, but that lead is short lived.
Now they're at second down and goal from the one. Now you would think this would be a keeper.
Boy, official calls it a touchdown, the other doesn't, so it's a touchdown.
Touchdown, Nebraska, straight ahead, Martinez. Davion Nixon got underneath him, but Martinez reached across the line.
All right, tied at 13 at the half. So as the second half began.
And you don't feel good as an Iowa fan at this point.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm not watching this game firsthand, but for those, I'm sure, were you watching this game firsthand?
Yeah,
is that what you did?
Yes,
okay.
Yeah.
That's the only way to really get the true emotion.
Yeah.
It's all happening live there.
And by now, I mean, the momentum had shifted. They had come back to tie. Iowa wasn't playing well. The running game, I think Iowa had 35 rushing yards where we expect them to have hundreds by this point. And if you're not going to run the ball and Petras is going to play this poorly, where are points going to come from? They've already tied this game. This is starting to feel real bad.
Okay, so the second half begins. Momentum has shifted, and the momentum is in Nebraska's favor.
Robinson goes in motion. They run straight ahead again to Johnson. Big hole. He's going to reach the end zone. Fumbles it as he goes into the end zone. We've not seen a sign yet, but they're calling touchdown. Now they call touchdown, and Nebraska takes the lead.
Okay, so it's 20-13 Nebraska at that point.
Yeah, and this game is over in my head. It's
really?
If it felt, again, the way the Iowa offense had struggled.
It's a one-armed offense.
Yes. And that arm wasn't doing much. Goodson wasn't able to get going very, very well in that first half. There weren't the holes you thought there would be. Petras wasn't going to lead him down.
Without any threat of the pass, there are all sorts of options for the Nebraska defense.
Yeah.
The safeties are cheating up and putting big hits on
and
the
now backs. Adrian Martinez looks great, and he's had a couple of really nice touchdown drives, and you just don't see how this is going to go the other way.
Iowa does get it to go the other way. They turn to Tyler Goodson and Makai Sargent to get things moving along.
And they got a tight eye. This is typically a running play. Sargent on a cutback. Touchdown. Touchdown, Iowa.
Really started to find some holes there. Felt a little better at that point.
Starting to grind them down. It's tied at 20. Fourth quarter is all about Keith Duncan. Again, you just want one of those drives to end in a touchdown. And you hate to be trading the 3 points here, but you're also just thankful you got a reliable kicker, at least from short distances.
Sure-legged Keith Duncan will try and give Iowa the lead back. Right through. Right down central. Duncan puts the Hawks in front, and it is good. Just inside that right upright. 26-20. Iowa has a 6-point lead. Here's the snap, 51-yard try. He got it away. It is. Hits the crossbar. Hits the crossbar and bounces away. No good.
That's just a knuckleball.
It was.
Really low line drive kick, had some curve on it, and
you can tell it's just outside of his range.
Yeah.
They've gone to another kicker a couple of times in that 50-52 yard range. It just Duncan can't.
Seems to be
there.
Kicking himself, have kicked himself out of the NFL with his inability to hit the 50 plus
need
kicks.
To be able to hit like 60s.
Oh my god, in the NFL now, 58 yarder. It's like, yeah, okay, that's all right. That's pretty good. Nebraska with a chance to win down 6, ball on their own 30 with 2 minutes to play.
Martinez hit. The ball's loose, and Iowa has it. The Hawkeyes have it. He was hit by Chauncey Golston, and the ball recovered by Zach Van Valkenburg. I'm not sure why Nebraska was in such a hurry, but Martinez went with a quick snap, double cocked, and before he could fire the arm forward, he was hit by Chauncey Golston, and the Hawkeye defense has forced a turnover, and Iowa will take over at midfield.
Nebraska with a couple of bad turnovers at terrible times there. That muffed on the punt.
Yes.
He didn't even come close to catching that cleanly. And then that play there with Van Vandervanden getting the awesome interception.
That's his fourth fumble recovery of the season.
Yeah, that was an acrobatic play. It was great. So after the game, here we go. Scott Frost blamed some errant snaps with the ball being snapped over Martinez's head. Blames them on clapping coming from Iowa's sideline. Kirk Ferentz having none of it.
What the hell are we talking about? Like, it's stupid, right? So this is stuff 22 years, this is my 22nd year. I've never heard him thinking about that. It's football. So maybe they need to change their cadence if it was interfering with the cadence. I don't know. I've never heard of that. Never heard of it. Now, if a player on the field was doing it to try to, I get that. But what are we talking about?
The next
thing you know, we're going to be treating this like golf. I was going to say tennis, but they do that at tennis, right? But in golf, nobody's allowed to say anything, right? Sorry. No. Sorry.
Coach, the next question from Mark Freund.
I don't know how to follow that up.
Yeah, we should just go home right now. And what are we talking about? It's football, right? Yeah. It's football.
Pretty adamant.
Are they okay with how I dress today? Should I be changing my pants or, different shirt? I mean, what are we talking about? Okay, I'm sorry. I'm distracted right now. Totally
You're
distracted.
You're good. I get it.
You always know that Ferentz is pissed when he starts apologizing.
Yes.
A lot. That's his tell. They were clapping.
He was feeling it.
They were clapping to throw the center's rhythm off.
You can tell as soon as he heard, because I think it was Chad Lysica who said, Scott Frost brought this up in his postgame, and right away Ferentz goes, please. And then you could tell the way Ferentz feels about the opposing coach. He's never going to talk like that about Jim Harbaugh, even.
Right.
Let alone
somebody that he likes.
Yeah, right.
He has respect for.
These young guys, obviously, he doesn't have a lot of respect for, or at least doesn't appreciate the way they approach the game. Because
talking about P.J. Fleck and
Scott
Frost,
what he said a couple weeks ago about P.J. Fleck, and nothing bad about him, but this is so unlike Kirk Ferentz to even go off the script
this. There's a code in coaching.
Yes.
Things that you do say, maybe you feel them, but you don't say them, right? You might say that to your own guys, but to go out and air it through the media is something you don't do. That's against the coach's code. You're going to make some stupid, wild claim and air it through the media. You're going to tick off an old school coach.
Also, and like, there's video going around of an Iowa coach, you know, clapping on the sideline, you know, trying to get them to snap the ball at the wrong time. Davion Nixon has been called twice this season for simulating snap counts.
And so, it's a quiet atmosphere that you're not used to having in these stadiums this year.
But these snaps weren't bad because they were timed incorrectly.
He flat out snapped it over his head.
One time it went right into Adrian Martinez's shoe and then like right back to the offensive line.
And they pulled that center out.
They did.
And then they put him back in the game.
Yeah. And Scott Frost would have you believe it's because he talked to the refs at halftime. They got Iowa to stop clapping, and now this guy is an all-world center again. And it's just, you know, we talked about this a little last week. Scott Frost just has this tendency to blame everybody else. Mm-hmm. He blamed the refs on that Iowa. He thinks Iowa jumped on one of their field goals, which nobody saw, but he
pitched a fit on the sidelines. Did he move? Did he not move? Yeah, right. Did he move?
Yeah,
he
mother.
You mother? Yeah, you mother. Like Parliament Funkadelic.
It was fun to see Scott Frost kind of melt down that, I got to admit.
Well, he was upset. The guy did not move.
No, there was no movement.
It was...
And to say that the clapping, I don't know. It was good to see Ferentz really feeling it there. You could tell he's got a team that has won four in a row.
Yeah, it was fun.
Won six in a row against a rival. He felt good Friday night.
It was kind of a sloppy win, but it was against a rival, so you feel all the better. And a rival who's pitching a fit makes it just feel a little bit.
It does.
Makes you feel a little better about winning that game over the rival. Okay, we're going to bring it up again in hour number two. We'll talk more about these games and do a whole lot more. It's the Murph and Andy Show.